For the 205th time, we are back for the Parish of the Patriots. I'm back. I'm glad you're back. If you're a first time listener, I'm glad you're here. Hopefully you'll get something out of it. And you too will become an official member of the congregation of the Parish of the Patriots. You will be a parishioner. You're invited to be a parishioner here. With that having been said, we do have a Christian specific segment. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. Listen once, and you're going to want to listen again if you're a Christian believer, for sure. With that having been said, also, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We're just rolling right along. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We do pass the offering plate around the show. Obviously, you get that for free. You can just listen to it anytime and never put nothing in the plate. But what does that say? Cheapskate. That's right. We pass offering plate around. And if you put money in the plate, Jesus is going to get you a new car. No, this ain't that kind of show. This ain't the televangelist show. But I do appreciate it, and I'll be a little less broke. What can you guarantee me I get? If I put something in the plate, I guarantee you I will be that much less broke. If you put $5 in the plate, I'm $5 less broke than I am, and I'm going to be really appreciative. If you want to do that, go to the bottom of the description page here on Radio Albin for the show. It's easy. I got snail mail. Nothing gets easier than snail mail. Got Bitcoin, got Monero. Get email address down there. Drop your notes. If you got a weirdo cryptocurrency, which is a nice diplomatic way of saying shit coins. If you have shit coins, drop me an email. I can probably get you an address for that, and I have no pride. I'll take your shit coins too. I don't care. Listener, supporter, mailbag, because that's part of. You see, you put money, you're not shy, you pay your tithes. And we have this back and forth, this feedback. GPD, keep the faith and keep on rolling, Mr. T. We are rolling. We're rolling. That was the listener supporter mailbag, by the way. I have one more, but I'm putting it in the Christian specific segment. So you see, that's it. We're 2 minutes in. People be like, and you have people once in a while be like, I wish you'd quit talking about sending you money. I don't want to hear all that. 2 minutes in. 2 minutes in, I've done the intro. I've told you how you can put money in the plate. I've read the listener supporter mailbag, and we're rolling. Rolling. No, we're not rolling. We're up. Isn't it funny? This is a weird thing, and maybe it's just me, but I don't think it is. I think it's y'all too. You will forget songs that you like. The songs that you like in 10 years, and you forget about it. Songs that you hate will stick with you your entire life. As you get older, if you're like 20 years old and you're listening to this, you'd be like, what's this crazy fool talking about? When you're my age, you're going to know what I'm talking about. Because your brain does not have a defrag in it. Your brain does not clear the cache. Your brain does not get rid of those temporary files it should have. I can remember commercials. I can remember songs that I hate. I remember when I was a kid, little kid, back in the 70s. That's right, the 1970s. I was a little kid. No, I'm not a boomer. I'm an Xer, but I'm an early Xer. And they used to have these ads, you know? What's the company like? KTEL or something like that. I don't remember. But they would have these ads. You watch TV. And they would have these ads. And you buy these records. Those are like those things, those black round things. Played at 33 revolutions per minute if you had the big one. 45 if you had the smaller one. Now these ads, you buy these records for $9.99. Had all these great hits. And they would play little snippets of the hits all throughout the commercial while they're rolling it, fast rolling it through there. So you could see if you wanted to buy this album, this record that had all these various. And there was a song. I don't know who sang it. I'm not looking it up because I hate the song. Up, up and away in my beautiful balloon. Now I have stuck that in your head too, and it will curse you forever because you didn't put nothing in the offering plate. No, I hate that song. I'm teasing. I hate that song, but that's the song that's in my head. Why? Because they're freaking out this past week. I'm recording the show on Saturday. So if there's big happening on Monday, don't be like, how come it ain't on the show this week? Because I done recorded the show. I've been going on. About this sinister balloon. That's right. Them evil chinks are up to it again. They're infiltrating our national security with their highly sophisticated balloons. It's always hard. I said this, I think, last week. I don't know. I say a lot of things. I don't remember when they are. But I said at some point, I said it's hard to tell when you read these comments, you know, when you read on the internet what's supposed to be what other people think. And it gets real confusing to get an accurate measure of where people are at. Because A, there's so many paid shills. And B, because people in general are stupid. So you don't know what you're looking at. You read these comments on a story pertaining to the sinister Chinese spy balloon. Notice nobody is supposed to be upset that according to their narrative, this would spend billions and billions and billions of dollars on quote unquote national defense. We got all these spy agencies, all of this military. And according to their narrative, all you got to do is float a balloon over. And they're not going to notice it till it's roughly in the middle of the country. They're trying to whip people up. You got this sinister balloon. My beautiful balloon. You're supposed to be all... Now you know why I'm not singing for a living. You got the sinister balloon floating around spying. And you read these comments. And people are like, it's just like China, you see. China, they just happen to be floating around our military installations. It's like, we have military installations all over the country. A military police state. Of course, it's gonna float. If you having a birthday party for your little kid and they got one of them, you know, helium balloons on the flowers or whatever, and it comes untied and floats off, it's gonna be floating over some sort of national security installation. The whole country is just full of that shit. Just like Chinese, see, they're spying on us with this balloon. You're not supposed to ask, well, how the hell? They're telling us it ain't going to matter if China or Russia launches nuclear missiles at us because, you see, our military is 100% totally capable of taking them out. As long as they don't float a balloon over. I don't know. I don't know how many people, when you read this stuff, I don't know how many of these commentators are paid shills and how many of them are just, you know, 100% sincere morons. Now, the Chinese say... They say it's a weather balloon. Again, the comments, of course they'd say that. And you see, I think they're lying. I think the Chinese are lying about it being a weather balloon. You see, I think the Chinese might have... I'm just being funny, by the way. I think the Chinese purposely floated this across there.
To test our national security.
No, to make us look stupid. And it worked. Have some hysteria. They floated a balloon over. And we're supposed to be outraged. You read these comments.
We need to shoot it down, take that thing apart, and then tell China what for. You better look out, buddy.
The U.S. government made a big deal out of this. You know, they were like,
we will not tolerate any incursions of our national security on our sovereign airspace.
Meanwhile, they flying into Chinese airspace on a regular. They always sailing ships through the Taiwan Strait, which is part of China. They doing this all the time. And then they get like, how dare you float a balloon? Some of these people commenting, too, they're like, well, of course. And they'll acknowledge it. They'll be like, what do they mean they can't shoot it down? Because the military is like, well, we'd shoot it down, but it could cause debris to fall in Montana. How big is this balloon? Is it like the world's biggest balloon? China's going big, or they not going at all. Debris could fall. It's not a real populous state. I mean, they're not talking like it was floating over the city. You got some of these people, though, you know, and it's like, you know, they'll acknowledge this stuff, and then they'll be like, the reason I ain't shot it down is because Biden and the Democrats are owned by the CCP. I can't deal with it. You know, maybe sometimes I'm just coping. I'm just telling myself these are paid shills because I just want to cope. I don't want to believe that people are that damn stupid. When in reality, Americans are very timid people. They're going to tell you, they talk all kinds of shit. But, you know, because I've got a lot of European listeners and listeners in Great Britain. You know, I get, it's one thing I love about Christmas time because I got my snail mail. And people send me Christmas cards from all around the world. And I love that. It's just like so cool. I got all these listeners all around the world. And if you live in Europe or Australia or whatever, you don't understand what it's like here. Americans go around and talk all kinds of shit, you know, because we got our guns, you know, that's right. We're about cowboys and independence and our guns. Let me tell you, that's how it was in the past. That ain't America today. America today is about gay anal, child trannies, and being very timid. What do I mean by that? Americans have got to be whipped up and scared about something. Americans, and I say that it wasn't always that way, but maybe that's not 100% true. My entire life, and I've been on this earth for a minute now, my entire life, the American people have always had to have, they are conditioned, they are mentally trained and conditioned to have this boogeyman. There's a boogeyman out there floating up in the sky, looking down. You know, this is right on par. Excuse me. This is right on par with the whole nonsense about, you know, TikTok is allowing the Chinese government to spy on American citizens. Like, what are they going to find out? Am I going to get a letter from, you know, if I had a TikTok? I don't. But if I did, am I going to get a letter from Chairman Z? Is that letter going to have a check? Is Chairman Z going to pay his tithes? No, he's not. Vladimir Putin never paid his tithes either. And yet we all got called Russian agents at one point in time or another. Americans have had to have some kind of boogeyman under the bed, under the closet. They always got to be scared of something. There's always somebody out there. Is whoever it is. When, you know, it's North Korea. There'll be people, when they put up a North Korea story, you read the comments, and it's like, oh, I'll tell you what, that Kim, he's ready to start trying to invade America at any minute. Yeah, I mean, they got to have a boogeyman. Most timid, frightened people in the world. And we don't need to live like this. That's a shame about it. We don't got to live like this. I mean, yeah, no, look, I don't have some, you know, pie in the sky view of humanity. You know, I have some view that, you know, can't we all hold hands and just get along? I understand that the world don't work that way. I understand that, you know, given the opportunity, there are always going to be people out there that will want to take your stuff from you, invade your country, take your stuff, whatever the case may be. But this notion of this constant boogeyman out here, because at the end of the day, most countries, at the end of the day, most people, if you can work out some kind of deal, like y'all can do business together, you know, and all parties involved get something they want, maybe not everything they want, but something they want, you know, people would normally, under normal conditions, will take that over just, you know, going to war. But we got to have this boogeyman. We got to have this boogeyman floating in the sky, looking down from the big balloon. One of the basic things about the boogeyman thing that is in America that keeps Americans scared all the time is the boogeyman can be changed by the media at any minute. And you can always spot the shifts. Again, I've been around a minute. I've seen the shifts. Back before this Russia nonsense started, I remember when Obama was in there and Hillary Clinton like came out and was like, well, we really need to be here. And maybe, see, it was like Hillary Clinton, Mitt Romney, and they were like, you know, criticizing Obama. They were like, the real boogeyman out there are the Russians. They're bringing the Soviet Union back. And Obama didn't have the message. And he was just like, made that joke about, you know, well, Mitt Romney, somebody needs to tell him that, you know, the 1980s called with their foreign policy. And I actually thought that was funny at the time. You know, I mean, most people I interact with are normie conservatives. And at the time when I thought that was funny, they thought I was kind of weird, you know. You're supposed to team for, I thought you were cheering for Team R. What's wrong with you? What sports ball team do you like? What jersey are you wearing? Why did you think that was funny when Obama said that, you know, that's 1980, what Russia could be trying to bring the Soviet Union back? It could happen. And fast forward, and here we are. Here we are. And it's funny because there's not universal agreement in this stuff. You know, because we just get put on this trajectory. We don't have no say. If you're living in another country in the world listening to this show, I'm going to impart on you because you're going to be like, I hate Americans. I hate America. I hate Americans. But understand this, with at least a little sympathy. Yes, the American people are timid. Yes, the American people are rather overall kind of stupid. But going by comments that you see in general, not everybody. People listening to this show are not stupid. because if they were, they wouldn't be listening to this show. But understand this, the American people have no say-so over this government. We're on a trajectory. Nobody voted for constant gay anal and child trannies. Nobody voted for that. People are generally against that. We don't have a say in what happens in this country. It's funny when you watch the tug of war because they can't decide. You know, when people get this, when you realize that we don't have any say, people get this idea that like there's this monolithic entity that is running the country. But they're not that monolithic. And you see this tug of war right now because you got like, it's represented by the chess pieces like Team D and Team R. And you've got Team D and part of Team R that are continuing to push to, they want to go all in on this Ukraine thing. They want to go all in on war with Russia. But then you have another part of Team R that is like, we don't need to go all in. We need to go ahead and fold like a poker game. We need to fold on this Russia thing because we need to be concentrating on going to war with China. And nobody got no say-so in this democracy system about why we should be going to war with anybody. But you got Team D and part of Team R that want to go all in on Russia. But then you got part of Team R, and I don't know, probably some of Team D that want to go ahead and go to war with China. And I think at the rate they're going, they're going to keep going back and forth on this thing. And they're going to wind up in a war with Russia and China at the same time. It's going to be lousy. It's going to be lousy. These evil Chinese and their balloons. You can't just send balloons up over the United States and bypass all of our high-tech billions of dollars worth of spyware. Chinese haven't invented satellites. They can't put a satellite up and look down. They got to send balloons. See, that's how backwards. That's how backwards them sneaky Chinese are. And they... They're super sneaky and they don't know how to put satellites up. What else is going on? I just so tickled over that stupid balloon story because it's on his face, so stupid. And yet you got people whipped up, riled about it. They're just laughing about it. Even evil Chinese spying on it. Nobody's asking. If that's true, and it's not, it's stupid. But if it's true, where are all these billions of dollars? And all somebody got to do is float a balloon over. I read somebody commented somewhere and they're like, you know, every country in the world ought to put up one of these balloons and put it in the jet stream, let it float over the U.S. and freak them out. It's like, we got balloons from North Korea. We got balloons from China. We got balloons from Guatemala. We got balloons, right? Because anybody can afford a balloon. Them evil, well, maybe not Haiti. Haiti couldn't send a balloon unless the Clinton Foundation like funded it. But everybody else could. Them evil Zimbabweans. Zimbabwe has floated a spy balloon over the U.S. If you can just float a balloon over, anybody can do that. I think it'd be hilarious. Nigeria has floated a spy balloon over the U.S. Madagascar. Stupid stuff. All kinds of stupid stuff. I see this sometimes on the computer. And this is a sad state we're in. You know, you would think, impartially looking at the world, that some things would be like the same, you know. But as a society, things have gotten so corrupted. Even like basic things that should come normally and naturally. You know, like relationships between men and women. Oh, I'm going there. You know. You would think that wouldn't be able to be affected. And yet, here we are. Here we are with these really weird, abnormal. Weird, abnormal things. I see these debates that pop up sometimes. And people that are so sick of this. You know, and we're going to be true. You know? Women, pretty bad. Pretty toxic overall as a group. The feminism and all of this nonsense. We're going to get into that here in a minute. But because I do have a point. Believe it or not, I got a point. But you see these discussions, and I always chuckle to myself. You have these discussions about, you know, we're going to have AI sex robots, you know. You're not even going to have to look. You ain't going to have to deal with these bitches no more. You're going to get an anime. Your 2D waifu is going to become 3D with an AI brain, and she's going to be able to interact with you. And they're going to come up with these artificial, they're going to have these artificial wombs, and they're going to develop them to the point that you can breed your AI powered silicone sex doll waifu. Because you can't really just say sex doll, because she's also going to be cleaning and cooking for you too, and like AIing around the house. And people talking about, you know, when that happens, these bitches are going to be obsolete. And they ain't going to like it. And that's how it's all going to get fixed. The invisible hand of the market is going to fix these bitches' behavior. Because you see, when they can't, when they cannot, when they can no longer hold the, you know, hold out the coochie to manipulate you around, because you can have a much more attractive and much more agreeable AI-generated waifu. You see, you have no need for the unpleasant Skinkosaurus Rex. She is going to become extinct like the dinosaurs. What species is this? This is Skinkosaurus Rex. Skinkosaurus Rex is quite discernible. Usually with some sort of colored hair and multiple tattoos. I'm picturing archaeologists somehow digging this up. What specimen have you found, Nigel? I've found a remarkable specimen of Skankosaurus Rex. Bloody hell, man. We're in the North American continent. You can find Skankosaurus Rex anywhere. It is not a remarkable find. Yes, but my evidence finds she has multiple children with a single man. Whoa, whoa. It may be a whole nother species altogether. All right, the AI sex robots and artificial wombs are going to make Skankosaurus Rex go extinct. She's going to then have to reform her behavior, because there will be competition in the market. She's going to be like, listen to me when I talk to you. You need to buy me dinner and take me out and treat me like a princess while I battle the patriarchy. And you're going to be like, I don't got to do any of that, bitch. Because you see, you're fat and my AI waifu, my AI powered waifu here, you see, she's going to be young and pretty forever. That ain't going to happen. I'm having a joke out of this, because look, guys, that ain't going to happen. That ain't the way the world works. You're not getting anything beyond, like, you know, a better version of those blow up sex dolls. I mean, that you're getting a better version of that. They already have better versions of that. But you're going to still feel like you're humping a corpse. I'm going to be real, dude. You're going to feel like you're humping a corpse. That's gross. You ain't getting no AIs. If you did have that, how would that work? Because, like, you're young and you hear that stuff and you're sitting around fantasizing. You're like, that would be so perfect. I don't need no GF. I got this perfect waifu. I just had to order her on credit, paying out over the next 10 years. How's that work, though? You see, you miss out because you're just thinking about getting laid, and you're thinking somehow if you humping this robot. This is where we're at. This is the point. This is where we're at. You think if you're humping the robot and you quote unquote getting laid, and she got an artificial womb and you can actually program her to where she gets pregnant. So good. You only have to take her to the doctor. She's going to spit the baby out right there in the incubation chamber, whatever the hell. Heck, for that matter, she could be equipped to where, like, her stomach opens up like on that old Alien movie and the baby just comes out. Silly. You ain't getting that. Why would you want it? But how would that even work? Because you see, after that, you still going to get old. Just play this out in your head. You're going to get old. You're going to get older, and she's going to stay looking like a robot waifu, like always. And you're going to get older. And I mean, yeah, she ain't going to abandon you. But you're not going to grow. You're not going to have the experience of growing older together. You know, and going through life together. You know, she's just another object in your life. You know, this is just she. Your waifu. You know, you're going to get older. She ain't going to get any older. And then what happens? You're at the end of life and you're going to die. What are you going to do with your waifu? Because you're going to be leaving her behind. You know, are you going to program her to like deactivate and self-destruct when you die so that nobody else, because you want nobody else humping your waifu? That'd be sick. You know, your children going to gather around your waifu? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. It's not real. Look, the point is, all joking aside, because it is worth joking about, you're getting that. You ain't going to get that. But don't worry. Nature is, the natural order is going to fix this. It isn't going to be nice. You see, because women hear that, they hear that whole thing about people, you know, guys no longer, you know, putting up with their bullshit, and because they're going to have robot waifus, and they get upset about that. Now, ladies, on the good news is you ain't got to worry about that. That ain't going to really happen. The bad news is the natural order is going to restore itself, and it's going to be not good. It's not going to be a pleasant thing. Women, the ironic thing here is women have spent all this time, because of feminism, they've been convinced, you know, that it is to their benefit to dismantle the patriarchy. You see, they find true freedom and independence in dismantling the patriarchy. We got to dismantle the patriarchy. And they're having success. I mean, we call it like it is. They're having success. They've been having success for years, dismantling the patriarchy. Most people, and women in particular, are not ever going to catch on. The more they dismantle the patriarchy, the more miserable they are. This started with convincing women that instead of, like, you know, staying home and your job is taking care of kids in the house, they would be much happier being a wage slave somewhere doing menial work. And it's just gone from there. Women have been successful dismantling the patriarchy. But what they don't understand, because I'm not going to preach early, but see, the satanic inversion is always going to be the lie. The lie was that the patriarchy is what's keeping you down. The patriarchy is what's keeping you from happiness. The only reason you're not truly independent and going out and seeing the world and being happy is because of the patriarchy. The patriarchy. It's like when you hear women complain and they say, where's chivalry gone? Same bitches they're talking about. I don't need a man for nothing. I don't, no man need to be telling me what to do. No man, a woman. I saw the show on, and I saw this movie, and these women were beating these guys up. You see, because if you got training, a woman can do anything a man can do. Then the same bitches will be like, why didn't you hold the door open? What happened to chivalry? Why come men have got no manners no more? You see, chivalry is gone. And you bitches killed it. I call it like it is. Y'all killed it. Women have successfully dismantled, or almost completely successfully dismantled, the patriarchy. Here's the inversion. Here's the lie, because here's what they don't understand. The patriarchy is what protects them. The patriarchy was created, not intentionally. It was just, became a creation, came into itself as a system. A social system to protect women. That's the inversion. That was a lie, ladies. The patriarchy isn't what was oppressing you. The patriarchy was keeping you safe. Now you've dismantled it. The patriarchy is keeping you safe. You see, they just traded one patriarchy for another. This will make sense in a minute, I think. I hope. They traded the patriarchy of their families, be it husbands, fathers, brothers, of keeping them safe. See, they replaced that patriarchy with the government patriarchy. And they shit all over the traditional patriarchy. I don't need y'all anymore. I got Big Daddy government. Take care of me. They really just traded one patriarchy for another. But the patriarchy is a system, is a society. It was to protect women. It was like a social contract. See, women maintained a certain societal norms, which basically boils down to don't go around being like a bunch of whores. I'm using that in the technical sense, not in the insulting sense. I mean that in a technical sense. Don't be going around like that. Be modest. Have some class. You'll honor yourself. You'll make yourself a better person. You will be happier. In exchange, the quote-unquote patriarchy will keep you safe. Will protect your honor, my lady. To the point, guys used to, you know, put their jacket down so she wouldn't step in a puddle because her dainty feet. Of course, ain't no women hardly with dainty feet now. Just get big old. Anyway, you dismantle the patriarchy. without realizing that, you know, that all goes in. Hey, you can't violate your part of the social contract and then expect everybody else to hold up their end of the bargain. You dismantle the patriarchy. And let me tell you what that means. And this is how the natural order is going to reassert itself. And a lot of y'all ain't going to like what I'm fixing to say. I'm just going to give you a forewarning right now, but it's true. It's a true. Because right now, yeah, you technically just replaced the traditional patriarchy with a temporary one, with the government patriarchy. You see, you don't have your husband, your father, your brothers to protect you, but you got the government, you got the courts. That's temporary. As society breaks down, that's not going to happen anymore. But you see, natural order will correct itself. You've seen that in Europe. They imported all these people from the Middle East and Africa, and what are they doing? They coming out now and they're telling their women, their young girls, they're like, y'all can't be going around dressed like that. You're going to be more modest because if you don't, your ass going to get gang raped. It's offensive when you read about that sort of things and such. But you see, like it or not, the natural order is a very cruel thing. When you make that, that's why you should stay within the bounds of the natural order. By the way, if we were in the Christian specific segment, I would mention here that the natural order is another way of saying God's laws. But anyway. We're not there yet. We're fixing to be. I got to wrap this up. The natural order, if you stay, that's why you want to stay within that. Because as long as you stay within the natural order, everything's cool. But when you decide you know better and you go and dismantle, you try to dismantle the natural order. The natural order is just like a self-correcting program. And you get outside of it. It will self-correct. You see that now. It's one of the things that cracks me. And you see people offended, like, how dare you? Like, well-meaning, nationalist, right-wing people. And they well-mean. And they'll be like, they'll read these stories and it'll be like, you know, how dare the government come out and tell young women that they can't go around dressed like whores or they'll be gang raped. What is wrong with our country? Of course our women have the right to go around looking like whores. It's the natural order. The natural order is reasserting itself. As they have imported the Middle East and Africa in these countries in Europe, women are now being told, well, you can either get more modest and be accompanied by your brother, husband, or father, or you just roll in the dice that you're going to get some surprise sex in a back alley. People get offended at that. They're like, that ain't something to joke about. Remember that story was? I think it's Sweden. Had to have been Sweden. I don't know, but it had to have been Sweden. Come on, you know it was Sweden. And this bitch got raped by this guy. Dare you make light of it. And the guy got convicted. And they were getting ready to deport his ass back to, I don't know, Afghanistan, Africa, wherever the hell he was from. It wasn't Sweden. And remember, she got on the plane and protested and shut the plane down so that they couldn't make him leave. Let that soak in for a minute. So that they wouldn't let the guy leave because he might have a hard time if he goes. The natural order shall reassert itself. You're going to wind up with basically the patriarchy will come back at some point in time. Because the natural order can be, you break through that barrier to an extent, but it's self-correcting. It's going to correct itself. You're going to wind up right back. And that's the real thing. And that's the point here. And like I say, I got to get in the Christian specific segment. But that's the point. The natural order, the reality of the world here. I'm going to have to put my joking aside. The reality of the world here is not that you're going to correct this with, you know, robot waifus generated by AI carrying an artificial womb. That's silly. But the natural order is going to correct itself. Because the patriarchy was put in place, was established as a society, is a part of the natural order for a reason. Because women needed protection. All that bullshit the girls see on TV about they can do anything a man can do, that's a lie. You're the weaker sex for a reason. I don't care how bad you think you are. A 12-year-old boy could kick your ass. Okay? That's life. That's just how it is. And the patriarchy wound up coming into place to protect women in exchange for, you know, you help stabilize society. With some modest behavior and monogamy and children bearing and things such as that. You get outside of that, that's going to be the correction. You ain't getting no robot waifu. I'm sorry. Cancel that pre-order. You're not getting that. But it is, you are going to get a return to the patriarchy. As it comes about, it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be pleasant. And maybe even not in my lifetime, but you are going to get that. I can assure you the natural order will reestablish itself. And it doesn't care. The natural order is, what do I want to say? It doesn't care. It is indifferent. That's the word I'm looking at. It is indifferent. Like I say, it's like an automated program. It will just reestablish things to the norm. It doesn't care how, it doesn't matter how many people get hurt, killed, miserable, whatever, because the further you get out, the more drastic the return will be. But it will be returned. That's just the way things work. We got to get into the Christians. After all that, we got to get into the Christian specific segment. We got to get into the sermon this week. So without further ado, you know, to get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And before we really get rolling this week, I wanted to return real quick to the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, I wanted to thank you for some advice you told me a few months ago when you said that honesty has to start with being honest with yourself. I only really took it to heart in the last month or so when I confessed to myself, and therefore also God, some doubts I had in my faith. Acknowledging those doubts instead of pretending they weren't there really made it easy to fix them. It also gave me a great feeling to forsake my pride like that. Since then, I've noticed I've been calmer and less stressed. Your brother in Christ, Michael. And I'll just say thank you for your testimony. I think that's awesome, and It's always encouraging. I love the listener supported mailbag for these sorts of things. I mean, it's just great. And like I say, I'm a work in progress too, like all the rest of y'all. And it's very encouraging, you know, to hear from you and to know that these discussions, you know, maybe that they're working and you know, helping y'all out as well. Because like I say, I'm working through this stuff myself. I have worked through some of it. Some of it's an ongoing thing, and we're never done. You know, in this journey, while we're in this life, we're never done working on ourselves. And, you know, up to the last minute, you know, the last trial of your faith is when death approaches. If you see it coming and knowing it's coming and having to face that, that's the last trial you face. So we're never done. We're never done growing and working on ourselves and getting ready for the next life, the real life. This week, we're going to look in the book of James, chapter 1, verses 19 through 25. And we're going to read through this real quick, and then we're going to kind of parcel it out, you know, sort of like we generally do. So, yeah, James, chapter 1, starting with verse 19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness, and receive with meekness an engrafted word, or the engrafted word, I'm sorry, which is able to save your souls. But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass, for he beholdeth himself and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth the manner of man he was. But whosoever looketh into perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. Now, like I say, there are several things I thought we could look at through this, what we've just read here. And we're going to start with the very first part. And this is actually the main thing kind of kicked off my thinking on this for this week. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Now, there's several ways to read that. And there's several ways to interpret that. And by, I mean, you might sit there and say, well, what do you mean interpret? It's pretty straightforward what they're saying. It's not a riddle. It's not a puzzle we got to put together. But there's several ways you can interpret that, and you can perceive that. Perhaps that's the better word I'm looking for. Several ways you can perceive that. You should be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. That's what I want to start off focusing on. When you read that, you know, how does that strike you? How do you interpret that? Because I think the natural way to look at that and to hear that is what? As being told, like a list, you know, once again, another list of rules, you know, another list of things you better do and you better not do. See, you need to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. That's what you need to be doing. And you see, I think that's wrong. I think because I've always, I vast majority of my life, whenever I've read that with that interpretation. You know, I've read that, and it's like, okay, I need to work on this. I need to be quicker. You know, I need to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. You know, those are good rules. That's a good thing. I need to work on that. We always burden ourselves with rules. Sometimes we try to fall in. It's just human nature. I mean, it's funny when you read about the establishment of the early church. Everybody started trying to go back to a bunch of like rules, you know, like you've got the, you know, do you need to be circumcised? Do you need to be uncircumcised? Do you got to do this on a certain day and not eat this food and that food? And everybody tried to get back, you know, to following rules, to rule following. And the early apostles were like, no, that's not what we're saying. We're not trying to go continue in a bunch of rule following. And again, when you read this here, swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, that sounds like, well, that's what I need to be doing. Isn't that what he's saying? That's what we're supposed to do. See, I think the proper way to read that is as a measuring stick. In other words, where are we at in our faith? If you look at yourself, honestly, look at yourself. Are you swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath? If not, then you need to get... This is going to be good. This is going to be helpful to you. Bear with me. Sometimes I'm just a little slow getting started. It's a measuring stick. Don't think of it as these are the rules I need to be following and I need to concentrate on following these rules. Look at it as a way to self-evaluate. Look at yourself, self-evaluate. Does this apply to you? If not, then you're not, you know, this, as you progress in your faith, you are going to see these things reflected in you. We talked recently, and it says in the Bible, you know, God's laws will be written on your heart. This is a measuring stick. It's self-evaluation. Does this describe you? If you're honestly looking at yourself, how much does this apply to you? The more it applies to you, you know that you're progressing in your faith. So often when we struggle against our own weakness of flesh, our own sin, we become frustrated. You become frustrated because what? You're focusing on what? Not doing that. You are, you know, in honest faith and in the right motivation, you're trying to better yourself. And you find yourself, you're getting nowhere. Why? Because your focus is, I gotta quit doing that. See, your focus is still the sin. You're still focused on the sin. You're trying to do the right thing. But unfortunately, you're still focused on sin because your entire metric, your entire measuring stick of where you are as a child of God is whether or not you're doing that sin. How long has it been since you... If your measuring stick of your faith and your progression is the sin, it'll always have power over you. You hear somebody who's... recovering, for instance, from drugs or alcoholism. And they'll say, I'm 9 months sober. I'm 9 months sober celebrating. I'm 30 days sober. But that puts the focus on what? The sin. I'm 30 days sober, which insinuates, will I make it to 60 days? It insinuates almost a feeling of inevitability. At some point, you're going to go back to it. And what then? You see, if you get your little medal that says you congratulations, 30 days sobriety, and everybody stands up and claps for you. What happens if on day 43, you aren't sober? you are less than sober. What happens then? Then you got to start all over. You got to start all over now. Day one, here we go again. That's not the way it's working. That's not the way you grow in your faith. That's not the way you grow as a believer. You're never starting over from day one. You are always moving forward. There is no such thing. Hear me. There is no such thing as going back in time. You're not starting over. If you're sober for 30 days, congratulations. If on day 31 you get drunk off your ass, you're not starting over back here at day one again to try to hit that 30 days. You see what? Do you see the built-in failure by focusing on sin? Your built-in failure because the sin still has power over you. You're focusing on that. How long can I go without a drink? How long can I do it? And I'm just using this. This applies to whatever it is. If you're sitting there, don't be sitting there saying, well, I don't have a problem with drinking. Because this applies to whatever you're trying to overcome. If that's your focus, if that's your metric, then it's always going to, then it has control over you because there is this impending sense of inevitability. You're going to do it at some point. And then you got to start all over and you're stuck in this cycle and you're going to get discouraged and you're going to start feeling anxious and you're going to start faltering in your faith. Because it just seems like no matter what you do, you keep coming back. It's like you're stuck in this cycle and you're just beating your head against the wall and you're like, why am I not getting any better? Why am I not doing any better? Because you're not using the proper metric. You're not focusing on the right thing. You're just focusing on the sin. It still has power over you. When we read this, you got to be, you should be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to get mad. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. Put it in regular modern terms without the old ye olde English. This is a metric. It's not your focus. Nope, these are some rules I've got to follow. As you focus on the Lord instead of sin, to put sin in the back seat. You have to take away its power. Your focus is on God. Your focus is on Christ. Your focus is on reading His Word. Your focus is on prayer and understanding and growing in Him. That sin doesn't have power over you anymore. Quit making it your focus. And guess what? You're going to look around at some point and self-evaluate yourself and say, when was the last time I had a drink? I don't know. A month ago? A year ago? I don't know. I just know I've been focusing on the Lord and growing in Him, and I've got other things now, and now I find myself content. Because actually what was compelling you to drink maybe in the first place was this constant feel of anxiety eating at your soul. And now, you know, as you grew in the Lord and grow closer to Him, that went away, and the motivation to drink, you know, went away that you didn't even realize was there in the first place. And now all of a sudden, I don't know. It's irrelevant. I don't even have the urge to do that anymore. You see the metric. As you focus on the Lord and you grow in Him and you're focusing on Him, you're focusing on His Word, you're focusing on understanding His Word and what He's doing and understanding, you know, His will in this world and how He works and who He is, growing as we're supposed to do as children of God while we're here in this world. And then, you know, you look around and because we need a way to evaluate ourselves. Are we really growing? Are we really growing? Well, how much does this apply to me? My quick to listen. Not just to other people, because people, we just have chattering bullshit now. You know, I mean, there's just constant white noise of people talking nonsense. People have gotten progressively dumber. He's not talking about listening to people chattering on about worldly things. You quick to hear? Are you quick to hear the Holy Spirit? Are you quick to hear the Word of God? He's talking about you got to listen to every moron rambling on about something he has no idea what he's talking about. Why would you do that? Quick to listen to Him. I said the other day, or I don't remember, we're on show what? 205 now. I say these things, I don't remember if it was last week, the week before. But you, as you progress in your faith, your prayers are going to be a whole lot more, or I'm sorry, your prayers will be a whole lot less of you talking to God and a whole lot more of you listening to God. Depending on where you're at in your faith, that may not make sense to you right now, but it will. Keep at it and keep growing. And at some point, you're going to understand what I'm saying. As you grow, you're going to be talking a lot less to God because you, as you grow, you realize that you're not informing Him of anything. You know, sometimes it's fine. It's good to verbalize. We do that, but at the end of the day, you're not telling Him anything He doesn't already know. You're quick to hear. Your prayers are going to be a whole lot more about hearing what the Lord is telling you, giving you understanding about some Bible verses you just read, and you read these, and you say, well, now I'm going to pray, and you start to pray, and it's like all of a sudden you start, all of these puzzle pieces are clicking together in your mind, and you're like, wait, so that means, God is, you know, you ain't got nothing to say. Shut up and listen. The Lord's talking to you. Be quiet. Listen. Listen to what He has to say. When you read the Old Testament and the prophets literally heard a voice of God, the first thing they did was shut up. Hear what He had to say. Now, again, the slow to speak kind of is self-explanatory in that context as well. But you can also apply it to interacting with people around you as well. And it doesn't mean like you guys sit there like brooding in silence. But as we just said, you know what I'm talking about. Most people are chattering about nonsense. You know, people will be gossiping. It's your job or social function or whatever. And people like talking about one another and gossiping. And most of it's lies. And they just trying to make some kind of drama. You know, don't participate in that. You don't have to participate in a bunch of useless chatter. And slow to wrath. Now, slow to wrath, we've got to read the next verse. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Let me tell you something. There's nothing sinful about getting angry. Modern cut church is going to tell you, like, they do this whole, you know, Jesus is a pacifist, you know. As somebody put it to me one time, and I love it, you know, they've created this illusion of modern, you know, pacifist, you know, hippie Jesus or something. They do, you know, because you had these depictions in Jesus with his beard and his long hair, and it's like, they could see Jesus, man, he was the first hippie, bro. He probably was smoking weed, man. See, love everybody, peace, brother. You know, that's what Jesus was about. There's nothing unbiblical about getting angry. The MCC sits there and tries to tell everybody, you should never be angry. And that's wrong. That's wrong. There is a difference, though. You know, the wrath of man. There's a difference between a worldly anger and a godly anger. This is good. Stick with me. Keep sticking with me. There is a difference between a worldly anger and a godly anger. Worldly anger leads to nothing. That's what it's referring to there. Worldly anger leads to nothing. And just like with our listener listener supporter mailbag we just talked about, this will go back to being honest with yourself, will help you deal with that. If you have a problem with, like, getting angry all the time, you know, if you have a problem with flaring up in anger, and it happens to a lot of people. It has happened to me in the past. If you have a problem with that, let me tell you how to help you overcome that. Starts with being honest with yourself. You get angry on something. If you will stop and be honest with yourself, what are you really mad about? Because 99.99999% of the time, you know what you're going to find out? You're not really angry about what you're ranting about. What it comes down to is something completely off topic that's been percolating around in the back of your head. You're worried about how, you know, what it really comes down to is you're anxious. You're anxious because you're worried about how you're going to pay your bills this week because you don't think you're going to have the money. You're worried about making your car payment. You're worried about, I don't know, what your kids are doing with their friends or something. But you wind up with what you really, if you're honest with yourself, you're going to find out that this worldly anger, this flaring up, if you're honest with yourself, you're going to find out that that's actually not even what you're mad about. And why is this helpful? What difference does it make? Because then if you can get to the core, okay, why am I angry? It's not because, you know, this wrench slipped on whatever I'm working on. It's actually, you know, and I just blew up and threw everything and I'm screaming and cursing. And if you can stop, be honest with yourself, what are you really mad about? Well, actually, I'm anxious because, you know, I gotta pay this car payment in 4 days and I'm not sure I'm going to have the money. Okay. Now you're honest with yourself. You're honest with what's really going on. And the minute you are, you're going to find that whole worldly anger that you were just all embroiled in, and you're throwing words around without a care, without thinking about what they mean. All that suddenly fades away because now it's like, oh, okay, this is actually what I'm upset about. So then you can, now that you're honest, you can go to the next thing. Is there a decision I can make here? Because if the problem is because you're holding off on making a decision, if the problem, if the source of your anxiety, your frustration, etc., is because you're not doing something you should do, you're not making the decision to do something, then you can buckle down then and address the problem. I need to make this decision. It's time to make the call. I got to do this or I got to do that. I got to make a decision. However, if it's something that you can't make a decision and change, there's not a decision for you to make here. Either will or it won't. There's other people that are going to do whatever. You don't have any control of them. Whatever the case, if there's not a decision to be made here on your part, then what are you upset about? What are you anxious about? Because if you can't make a decision, if you can't take action to change it, then you're anxious and upset and whatnot about, you know, you're letting something eat you up that you can't do anything about. This is when you say, this is when it's in God's hands. Not in this evangelical nonsense of God is micromanaging your life. You know, I just leave everything in God's hands. And am I going to do anything on my part? We're going to get into that here in just a minute. Not that. That's when you say it's in God's hands. And by that, we mean I can't do anything about it. You know, God may or may not, you know, do something with it. It is going to be handled, by the way, for the simple fact that everything in this life is temporary. I'm sure 5-6 years ago, I was all concerned and twisted up over something. I'm sure it was. I'm sure you were too. Do you know what it is? Do I know what it is? No, I don't, because it's gone now. At the time, it was a big deal. Now it's gone. Same with you. I can guarantee you 5-6 years ago, you were all upset and anxious and worrying yourself to death over something. And now you can't tell me what it is because it's all temporary. It's in God's hands. It's in God's hands because that's just an acknowledgement. It's not necessarily literally saying, you know, God is going to intercede and take action. It's just a confession. It is in God's hands because ultimately, he knows how the pieces will go together in the temporal realm to accomplish his will. Remember, it's not about us. The focus is not all about God, make me happy. God, do this for me. Again, this is a failing of these evangelicals. You know, they make everything like God is at their beck and call, is their servant. You know, God, make me happy. God, give me a new house. God, do this. God, do that. God. No. God's will, the pieces of the temporal puzzle will come together that in such a way that ultimately, what are we told to pray in the Lord's Prayer? His will. The Lord's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Not that we're going to be great, not that we're going to be happy, but that God's will be done on earth. God will have all of the pieces come together to where his will be done. I'm not telling you God's going to provide. This isn't that kind of show. If you send me money, God's going to make sure you make that car payment. Send your car payment to me and God's going to multiply it 10 times. This ain't that kind of show. I don't feed you that kind of bullshit. That's why I'm broke and not on TV with fancy hair. Anyway, it's in God's hands, meaning you're acknowledging to yourself and therefore to the Lord that there's nothing you can do here. If there's a decision you can make, then yes, you need to take the action and make that decision. But if not, then it's in God's hands, which means you can't do anything about it. If you can't do anything about it, what are you sitting around beating your head against the wall and so worried and so upset and so twisted up over it? There's nothing you can do. If there's literally nothing you can do, then what are you upset about? If there's a decision you can make, then fine. You are obligated to make the call. You can't sit around and wait for God to do it for you. If there's a decision, you got to make it. Make the call. Do what you need to do. But if there's no decision to be made, then it's in God's hands. Let it go. You can't change it anyway. When you're honest, but to get to that understanding, you got to be honest with yourself. Otherwise, you're just going to be blowing up at everything. You can be sitting around, your kid trips in the middle of the living room floor in front of you and knocks the table over, and you're just going to blow up like a volcano. Kid laying there twitching around, bleeding, and you're all like mad. No, I don't know why I can't have a moment of peace, because you're not being honest. You're not mad at your kid for falling down, tripping over, and knocking the table. You didn't do it on purpose. You're mad because you're sitting there worried about how to pay these bills. You're worried about providing for your family. There's nothing wrong with being worried about providing your family. You got to get honest so you can look and say, what can I do? What decisions do I need to make? And if there aren't any and I've made the decisions I can make, then it's in God's hands. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing. That way, when your kid trips and falls and knocks off the table, you go see if he's hurt. Instead of getting up and kicking the table and screaming and cussing, now everybody in the house is upset and crying. You're even more miserable. And then as soon as that anger wears off, you're sitting around going, what the hell? That's embarrassing. But then you don't want to say nothing because, you know, that's admitting you were wrong and on and you get nowhere. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Now, that's worldly anger. I spent a lot of time on worldly anger. But you see, again, the MCC is going to tell you, like, you should never get mad. You're supposed to be, like, always smiling. You wind up with people lying to themselves. just talked about the importance of being honest with yourself. You got people lying to themselves. Like, they, no, I just feel nothing but the love of Jesus in my heart. There is such a thing as godly anger. When you look at these worldly things, the difference here's a quick primer on knowing the difference. Godly anger doesn't necessarily just flare up. Godly anger isn't something that just flares up. It's more of a slow burning anger. This too is a metric. See, your anger is also a metric of your growth, your spiritual growth. If the things that are setting you off, if the things that trigger your anger are all frivolous worldly things, then you're closer to frivolous worldly things. But if the things that lead you to anger are things that lead God to anger, because God gets angry. Read your Old Testament. They tried to edit it out. The angry God. They don't. The MCC doesn't spend any time on the angry God. I'm sorry. There is such a thing as godly anger. If the things that anger you is more of a slow burning thing, when you consider people having their lives destroyed by sin, and this world, this system, this society goes around and celebrates it. They parade it about. They give it names like love and pride, and it's actually people destroying themselves. I read a story here a while back, and I don't remember where it was. And this person had repented of homosexuality. He had repented of homosexuality. And I'm just remembering this story off the top of my head. I'm sure I'll get some stuff wrong. But in short, he had given testimony about repenting of this. He says, I don't do that anymore. It's no longer who I am. Is this celebrated? Was this celebrated in society? No, he's in court. That's right. He's being charged. Because, you see, they have laws on the book on the books against conversion therapy. Because conversion therapy tells, it's just a name they gave it. Because they want people to think it's something like, you know, some old, they putting leeches on people and giving them electroshock treatments. They wouldn't want to give it the sinister term. Conversion therapy. Conversion therapy, I don't even like using their terms. What we're actually talking here is the simple teaching that, like any other sin, you can repent of it and quit doing that. And this guy came out and said, you know what, that's right. I quit doing that. I no longer do that. And I'm happier for it. And now they're going to try to put him in jail for it. Because you see, it's against the law. It is against the law to tell people. We did a story Friday in the contents. See, this is godly anger starting to get riled up in me. We did a story, Sven and I, on our freezes this last Friday. Daily Nationalist, you know, some woman in court fighting with the school because they told her you got to put your 4-year-old in this pride and celebrating gay anal thing. 4 years old. And she had a big fight with the school. So it's not just celebrated. It's they're forcing you. They're trying to force people to do it. They're trying to, it's compulsory. Compulsory. I'll get the right word spit out here. I haven't had enough coffee this morning. It's compulsory. They don't want you. This guy's going to, they're trying to put this guy in jail because, you see, they don't want people hearing the word. Did you know what? You can actually repent from this and just not do it. And you're going to find yourself happier because they have laws on the books that saying you're not allowed to teach people that they are able to repent and turn away from sin. See, that makes me angry on a spiritual level. When you're talking about things such as that, see, this is the message. This is why they celebrate. The one thing they don't want people doing is repenting and turning away from sin. They don't want that. That's why they're telling everybody, this is pride. This is great. Yes, because they want more and more people doing it. And in the same context of that, they damn sure don't want anybody to stop. You always spot the satanic inversion, you see. You know, the word of God, the word of Christ, the message of Christ is that you can repent and turn away from these things. You can do that. The message of the world is no, no, no. That's who you are. That defines you. You can't any more turn away from that than you can, I don't know, change the color of your eyes. That's who you are. And it's a lie from hell. And they don't want here anybody. They don't want anybody hearing the truth. When you hear about things like that, that should make you angry. I'm not saying you should go, because godly anger doesn't prompt you to go out and do irrational things, but it should make you angry. If that doesn't make you angry, there's something wrong. Because you see, people are being led not to repentance, but to destruction. You hear about people that engaged in these different things and they have these high suicide rates and all of this drug use. Why? It ain't because they're full of pride and love and happiness. It's because they're miserable. Their lives are being destroyed a little. It's a slow drip suicide. And the society is saying you can't get out of it. You got to keep doing it. You're trapped in a prison and you got the keys. And they're just standing there telling you, no, you don't ever want to get out of here. This is who you are. This is where you got to be forever. See, this is a demonstration of godly anger. That doesn't make you angry. I don't know what will. That's a godly anger. Getting mad because a wrench slipped. That's just man anger. That's worldly anger. It's anger over trivial crap. When you look at these things, and see, because that sort of thing, I just discussed there, I just pointed out there. See, I can assure you 100% with absolute confidence that you see, that's the sort of thing that makes God angry. I can assure you God is angry at that. That's why I scoff when I see people with signs up, hanging on their yard fence or whatever, flags that say, God bless America. Because God is plenty angry. That's godly anger. I keep going, and we need to be wrapping up. But I want to just touch on this second part real quick. I was going to go into some more of this, but like I say, we're going too long. I want to get into the second part just because it highlights something we've discussed multiple times here on this show, and we're going to look at verse 22, and a little bit here. But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. Be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. This is just a reiteration of what we've talked about and what we've read in different parts here in our Bibles. Your faith is action. Everything in the Bible is about action. No empty emotionalism. So he said, don't be just a hearer. You got to be a doer. Your faith is not about words. It's not about empty emotionalism. It's about action. It's about what are you doing? And that's what's being pointed out here. Don't be just a hearer. Be a doer. He's not saying be a doer as far as follow a bunch of rules and being a doer. Grow, learn. Then you can look at these metrics and measure yourself against them and say, you know what? I'm getting more and more like that. I'm getting where I'm pretty slow to anger. I'm getting where I hear God more and I'm speaking less. I'm getting closer to him. You measure yourself by that metric. And you're doing things. Why? Because you're taking action. You are doing things. Don't just be a hearer. The world's full of hearers. Churches are full of hearers. You get people, they go and they spend that 1 hour a week, 30 minutes singing, 30 minutes listening to some preacher. 30 minutes listening to some preacher telling them about, peace and love, Jesus. And then they go on about their lives. And that's it. I mean, I guess it's better than nothing, but that is it. World is full of so-called, quote-unquote, Christian hearers. But there ain't very many doers because it takes work. Your faith is action. It's not just sitting around hearing. Just sit around, you hear this stuff, and that means you somehow everything's good to go. Your faith takes action. And it is. Everything in the Bible, I think that I wanted to touch on that just real quick as a parting point of once again highlighting that there is no empty emotionalism. There is no there is nothing that's not accompanied rather by action in the Bible. It is, our faith is always in motion. We are doing things. We're making decisions. We're not empty hearers sitting around waiting for God to do. We're not empty hearers. We're taking, our faith is action. It's not empty emotionalism. Love is action. It's not empty emotionalism. We should always be moving forward, taking action in our faith. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. I just thought, like I say, again, that kind of highlights that point as we get out. But hopefully what we discussed this week hopefully helps you. I'm really glad you joined us this week. As I kind of mentioned in passing earlier, we do the Friday Daily Nationalist Show. Sven Longshanks and myself, it's always a fun discussion. You want to check that out. And it's like I say, it's always a good time. And I always invite you to come back and check us out again next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.